DIMP Digital presents Idle Game Chat.
Cool!
Hello, Apps here from DIMP Digital, and welcome to Idle Game Chat. Slight change to the format on this edition, and perhaps going forward. There will be no 40-minute, hour-long, half-an-hour-long rambling from myself and Mr. Logan on this episode. And that may well be a permanent switch. It's becoming increasingly more taxing and difficult to do those every week. And I want to bring the focus back to the games. I do get frustrated with the news cycle, if I'm honest. So talking about it's not always as fun as it may sound to the audience. And for the short term, at least, we'll be reverting back to just the game chats that we have. And we'll see where we go in the next few weeks. We've got a little bit stored up in the old impression sessions bank, so it's not like it's going to go away imminently, but we'll be at Easter break shortly anyway, so we're going to try this for a few weeks, see what we get to. I would anticipate at some point, though, we will run out of game impressions. Like, the amount of games that are being finished is slowing down. Me in particular, I am massively slower than I was even a year ago, I'd say. So it's becoming increasingly difficult to get stuff out every week. So the idea of a weekly podcast might also change. It might just be as and when things are ready that you receive them, and that will take the pressure off us undoubtedly. But yeah, that is what's going on. So watch this space would be my suggestion. We've got Alan Wake 2 this week. Now, it's an hour-long conversation between me and Pac-Man, so it's still pretty meaty, and I'd actually rather spend longer on the game impressions and have that as the main or only focus than having a shorter impression session or a shorter review sort of bogged down with the news cycle. Because the news cycle is the news cycle. It's out there. It's always going on. But the games that we're playing, I still think, is the most important part of this. It's the part I enjoy the most. So that's where the focus is going to go, and we'll see how it goes. You know, we obviously appreciate the listeners and the viewers, and hope you continue to do so as we switch focus very slightly and focus on the games we're playing. And don't be surprised if there is an episode where there's nothing there appears because we've not finished, or there's no games ready to be played. I do plan on still doing the Fantasy Gaming League updates. That might switch to a monthly kind of recap style show. Kind of thinking that one through, like at the end of every month or the start of each month, perhaps just spending 5-10 minutes going through the table, going through what was released, transfers, etc., etc. That's it. DIMP Digital makes a slight strategic shift. Could be permanent, might not be. Never know, might revert back to it. Might miss drinking that coffee and talking rubbish about the games industry, but for now, you're going to be mostly hearing game impressions. I might do an intro every episode for each of them. I may do that. I don't know what I'll necessarily talk about. I mean, this is rambling now, really, isn't it? Sort of time filler for people. So keep an eye out. I don't know. We'll have a little play around and see what works, what doesn't work, what I can, be frank, what I can be asked to do. Grassroots, independent and all. It's difficult sometimes to get things done as and when they're needed. But we appreciate you all. If you want to support us, patreon.com/DIMPDigital is still open. Or you can head over to twitch.tv/DIMPDigital. Not that the streaming schedule's any more regular, but it might become more regular. We'll see. A bit of Hell Divers going on. Sometimes it's Fire Pro Wrestling World, which none of you care about. So that will get the punters in at least. Anyway, that's enough rambling for this. We've got Alan Wake 2. Myself and Adcock talk about that gem from 2023. As always, we'll see you on the other side. Here we are then, back with some game impressions to close out this edition of Idle Game Chat. You got apps here, joined by the gaming quiz champion, Pac-Man himself, Mr. Adcock. How's it going?
Yeah, good, thanks, mate. Not bad. My dream is to become quiz champ, FGL champ, and then whatever the main draw champion. Basically, because no one's done it yet, have they? No one's got all three.
No, I think so. There's a couple of people that are two steps away. Like Logan's one away. If he wins the quiz, he'll do it. But yeah, you saw his performance this past year. He's never going to get that accolade. Although you did finish last one year and then finished first the next year. So it can be done. Obviously, Adkins and you have won the quiz. Hall's won the quiz. So it's down to like really like one of you three getting the FGL done in a two-year span, like winning the Grand Prix and then winning the big one the year after, and then it's done. But Paper has retired from the quiz. He could also do it, but he's not going to be involved. So, yeah. It will happen one day. Whether we'll all be around to witness it, I don't know. It'll be passed on to...
the next gen.
Yeah, the next gen would have taken over Dimp by then, so someone will finally do it. But we are here to talk about Alan Wake 2, the 2023 title from Remedy. Both of us not playing this at launch. Very much bided our time. I got it like in the New Year sale, basically, when that kicked in like late December. And I think you were a couple of weeks after me, maybe. Maybe you even got it at the same time and started it a week or so later. But it was we didn't get it on release. We kind of just both ignored it. You understandably more because no prior knowledge of the first game. So for you, a bit of an ask actually to come into a second game, which is so narrative focused and get caught up. But for me, I really had my feet up and the reviews sort of tumbled in and that didn't convince me, but then some other sources that I kind of trust on certain games, I was like, and they were like bigging this up. I was like, okay, this sounds like I should just get to it, and the gap kind of came. But for you, I mean, I didn't even like the first one that much, I'll be honest. Let's get that out of the way with. I wasn't a big fan of it. I thought it was okay. And you even started it, didn't you? And then binned it off, like classic sort of 360 Adcock.
I played it a long time after that had come out. I'm talking several years later, and potentially it was creaking by then. And yeah, but I tried it with a friend, and I think they might have put me off a bit as well. Basically, I've probably done about 2 or 3 hours, and yeah, didn't particularly enjoy it. And then yeah, I knew I was going to get a voucher, like in a Secret Santa,
right?
So I knew I had that kind of digital voucher, and it was either Alan Wake 2 or Baldur's Gate. And I think, I don't know if you remember, I questioned you on it. And then realistically, I was like, well, one is a genre I've literally never played.
Yeah.
The other is in my wheelhouse. Though I was still nervous because I'm not a massive, like the other games by this developer, like Control, didn't really get on with it. And a lot of people did. So I was like, am I actually going to enjoy this? Or is there going to be some sort of gameplay mechanic or quirk that's going to put me off? So yeah, it wasn't a foregone conclusion.
No, I mean, I played through the original when it came out or shortly thereafter. It would have been within like a year or two. I was still in that generation. It wasn't like I played it when I got to the PS4 and Xbox One, and I thought, this is okay. Part of the reason why I think I was soured on it is because I remember reading about what the game originally was, and it's supposed to be like this open world. Like you stay in Bright Falls, then you go out, and then there's a real like daytime, and when it hits night, it starts to get, you know, serious and whatnot. But it was a different time of game. They scaled it back, and it became much more linear. In fact, it's very linear, and there's almost, you know, it's just level after level that you kind of travel through. And to be honest, I thought it'd been what, 12 years since that had come out, and I thought, well, there's no way we're going to get anything else of Alan Wake. They've just released Control, which probably a mild commercial hit, but critically again done very well, and I was like, well, that's where their focus is going to be. And then so I was surprised to see this Alan Wake 2 lurking, and pleased to as well. And having been through the original, I did a recap, the DLCs that came as well, just to get that kind of in place. And some people remember I also got the Control Ultimate Edition finally ticked off, which has a DLC related to Alan Wake, which was somewhat useful. Doesn't really do much for the second game. It's actually answering some questions of the first one, but it does leading and set up The second one with a little like Easter egg, not Easter egg, but a little reference in there that basically announced the second game and the release date they were aiming for. It was quite clever. I don't know if they actually hit that. Looking back, I'm not sure if they did. But yes, I was well prepared. You wasn't. And I guess one of the things, I'd already started it before you'd purchased it. And I was a little bit disappointed immediately to see there was no like previously on. Like, considering this game really tries, and the first one was more down this avenue, like splitting things up into episodes almost. This does chapters and parts of chapters. It's got this very much like a TV style presentation. I was completely taken aback that there wasn't some sort of previously on Alan Wake, because there's a lot of narrative beats that feed into this. Like, Alan's outcome in that first game directly ties into a lot of what this game is and where he's at. So I was a bit surprised not to see that. I don't know if... I mean, you went away and did the IGN thing, didn't you? And got the recap there. Yeah, but even
you recommended me that video recap.
It's because so I knew in-game there wasn't anything. And I was thinking, you can't send him in completely nude. It'll be upsetting for him. But what do you think of that? Lack of a foundation set in there. I know you can find it on the internet, but I do prefer it when games... I've just started Rebirth, Final Fantasy. There's like a 5-minute recap in the game. You just hit it and I was like, oh yeah, refresher done. It's nice.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't bother me, but it does. You're right. Considering how, you know, narratively strong this game is, and kind of how the different ways they go about trying to tell a story. Yeah, it's interesting that they didn't just spend 5 or 10 minutes at the beginning to bring you up to speed if you haven't played this game in 12 years. Yeah, it's a weird one.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the end of the world, so people can find out. But I would... Having played through it, I don't know if you'd agree with this, I would recommend you know what happened in the first one at the very least, because it kind of just chucks you in. I suppose it might be nice to experience it like that, because you'll sort of be in the shoes of like Saga, who's one of the dual protagonists, where it's a bit of an unknown. Yeah. So it's perhaps not the end of the world, but I always think you're better off knowing if you can.
I mean, the broad strokes are pretty, you know, Alan somewhere, Saga somewhere else, you know, like there's not a massive more, you know, you could easily go in blind and still get the gist of what is happening here, but yeah you're missing out. I think, and that's the thing, it is, I don't know how much what you like pin it down into in percentages. I think, you know, anything where there's little Easter eggs, even like the tie-in to Control in this, which they do throughout Pepper throughout the story, like I don't know if those characters are actually in that game or not. The people who appear here, but I'm like, things like that will increase your enjoyment of the game you're playing. I think that's where you're going to miss out.
Yeah, I agree. Before I go any further, I'm going to read the store page, get a little settler in for people. If they're like, what are they talking about? Here's what it's got to say for itself. From the studio that bought you Control, so referenced, comes a psychological survival horror starring two protagonists in two very different worlds. Saga Anderson is a gifted FBI agent called to a small Pacific Northwest town, Bright Falls, to investigate a series of ritualistic murders. Alan Wake is a writer who spent years trapped in the Dark Place, a terrifying alternate reality that can be reshaped by his words. Although they have never met, the two are connected across separate realities, their actions able to change their respective worlds. When the events depicted in the horror story caused Bright Falls to become engulfed in a corrupting supernatural darkness, both Anderson and Wake must use the power of light to survive and protect the ones they love. In a reality-bending world of victims and monsters, can they become the heroes of this story? So it kind of loosely sets up what's happening there. We know Alan's stuck in this alternate reality, and if you've played the first one, that's kind of like, you're like, oh, that's how it's left. You don't expect that for the game to take that turn. It does. And then we've introduced Saga, who is an FBI agent who goes out to Bright Falls, where the original game took place, to start investigating these ritualistic murders. And there's obviously there's connections between the two stories there. We both played this on the PS5, and we'll get into like performance and whatnot a bit later on. But one of the big, I wouldn't say controversies, but one of the things that probably put you off initially going for this would have been there is no physical edition of the game. Like, it is a digital only release, and it was only because you were getting Secret Santa to drop in a little bit of credit that you took the plunge of it. Is that, I mean, it was 50 quid at launch, so it is sort of a £20 discount on an equivalent to, say, Resident Evil 4, for example, or Dead Space remake. So there is an advantage, I guess. And one of the reasons they started not having the disc was because they could put a cheaper price on it. I don't know if I'd necessarily agree, but, you know, they've said it. That's what they're claiming. I can't help but think this kind of has hurt the game in some way commercially, just because there are people that just are resistant or don't want to deal with anything digital only. And it just seems like a bit of a short-sighted approach. I don't know if you agree or disagree.
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, yeah. I think you guys were talking about it on the pod I listened to recently, where I've been a bit of an older one, actually, because it just jumped in after one finished, and I was like, I haven't heard this. But yeah, I mean, there's always going to be more money to be made. I get that Sony, Xbox want to push things onto digital. Why the game developers make this choice? And at least you think once the buzz gets good about a game, I don't know how, like, what the lead time is then to get those, you know, physicals out, but it does seem like a missed opportunity. I know Baldur's Gate has got a physical coming, hasn't it?
Yeah.
It just seems like you've got really good critical kind of buzz about this. Game of the Year nominations. It's like, yeah, just
capitalize.
Yeah, exactly. It does seem like a missed opportunity.
Maybe they will. Maybe they will see there's demand or think, you know, we are getting a bit of buzz. Let's chuck it out there. Because I do think that's going to stifle its overall popularity, because there are people that won't partake in digital. And even you, it was kind of like the stars sort of aligned that you were going to get that, because otherwise I don't know if I could have... I probably could have convinced you. I don't know, maybe. But it still would have been a bit of a stretch. You'd have been like, well, maybe... Yeah. Maybe not, and it would have been one of those conversations. But, yeah. So we both played on the PS5, digital only, so that's the only option we had. I actually bought it on the PC originally, and I ain't going to go through the whole story, but the crux of it is I had a nightmare with the... I never had a nightmare of the game, but I had a nightmare myself trying to optimise it, and I just find PC gaming for certain games like this, like an immersive, narrative, survival horror where you don't really want to be thinking or doing anything else other than concentrating on the game, just knowing that there was optimizations to be had, that the frame was dropping on the PC, knowing that I could do something about it was really bothering me. So I eventually binned it on the PC, spent too much time, so I couldn't get my refund, which was annoying. So it's just sitting there, money flushed. And then I bought it on the PS5, where you've got a performance and a graphics mode, and that's it. You dealt with those cards and you deal with it. So that was a bit of I was quite annoyed about that for... You know, whilst I was playing through the game, but eventually the game just overpowered that and it didn't matter, and I've not really thought about it since. But I had a nightmare on PC, and there's a lesson not to be... I mean, this is quite a taxing game on PC as well, because they're doing some really cool stuff. Even on the consoles, it looks and runs pretty well, but it's sort of like a cyberpunk-esque game where you can get it to another level or two. You know, harnessing some PC hardware. It's got some good stuff going on. This might surprise people, sort of more cards on the table. I think my total playtime was like 28 hours. Like, this is a long game. Well, yeah. I don't know if you could mainline it quicker. Well, obviously you can. 28 hours is probably a bit excessive, but I think even if you try to mainline it, it's still a good 20, you know, close to that, high teens, if nothing else. Like, it's not...
I think that was about 25 or 6, yeah.
Yeah, and you're not exactly a slow player. I know you may have took your time, a bit more time of this one, but, you know, the easy analog comparisons are Resident Evil 4 and Dead Space Remake. They came out in the same year, so that's where we'll go to, I guess, to compare. I mean, they're less than half... Or actually, Resident Evil 4 was about 20, actually. I shouldn't say that. Resident Evil 4 has actually got some guts to it. Dead Space, 9, 10 hours.
Yeah.
Callisto Protocol, it was criticised for it. That was a shorter game as well. But this is moving up into sort of... I was like getting Last of Us 2 vibes in terms of its length. It felt much more meaty, much more layered than those type of games. In the end, was it a bit too long to keep your interest, or was you okay with that? Because I think there's a certain expectation. We jump into these survival horrors, whether it's Dead Space, whether it's Resident Evil, Evil Within, you know, they have a certain sell-by date on them. You don't want to be spent stressing for 100 hours. But sort of 20, 25 is up there with one of the longer games that most people will play.
It might, because I really dragged my heels on this, like we're talking about. before we come on. And I think that might be one of the reasons why. I really enjoyed the story. And then because of that, I only wanted to play it when I knew I had time to sort of sit down, you know, play for an hour or two, concentrate fully, not have Sarah yapping in my ear or Baby Ada roaring around. So I was like, no, I need like full immersion. Yeah, maybe it was perhaps a chapter on each side too long, but tell me, because some of the locations you visit are all good, like really good. So I don't know what you would drop there.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I mean, I'm glad you've said that, because I thought I was just really slow, because I did get stuck a bit. And, you know, took my time wandering around. I really went for like a lot of the collectibles, because the other thing was I was a bit scared in Alan's Dark Place, if I'm honest. So I kind of wanted to have... I don't even know if you need it, really, because, you know, there aren't that many enemies, really. But, yeah, I wanted to feel strong, because stressing me out in that place, I tell you.
Yeah, it's... I was pleasantly surprised at the length of it, because the expectation wasn't really there. And I think the game does enough to carry it for that length as well. So I'm not an advocate of really long games, and certainly games that don't earn their keep, but this one did, so got no problem with it. You know, if it was something else, and if it's like Valhalla, I always go back to 110 hours. No. That could have done with being 25, 28 hours. Absolutely. But not happening. So yeah, I was pleasantly surprised. That might filter some people, though. I can see a lot of people thinking, fuck me.
Yeah.
Are we still doing this? But I found it quite interesting. Moving on to things like the narrative and the story. Obviously, we're not going to give away the game here, as we try not to, in terms of what happens. But I'd be interested what you think of this. This feels like one of the... And the bar's probably low, and this is probably underselling it in some ways, because actually I'll probably come out of I'll clarify it further. But in terms of a survival horror game, I don't think there's anything that's close to this for a narrative. Now, the only thing that I've played, and I'll qualify that, and the one that's missing is that Silent Hill 2, which I've heard is good to great on that front. But this is really good. The narrative, the way it's a bit self-indulgent sometimes, certainly, but I just found this completely, I don't know, enthralling at times. I was really hooked on what was going on. It's a lot of crazy stuff going on as well, but kind of made sense in the world. They've painted this particular landscape or this lore base where pretty much anything can happen without it feeling out of place, and kept me on my toes. Always wanted to get to the next chapter, see what's going to happen, what's going to happen with these characters, this character who's doing this and that, and really had so many layers. It probably does things that I wasn't even aware of, but there was stuff that I picked up on. I was like, wow, that's really clever, and it's subtle, that I've just not seen in a survival horror game, you know, in the modern ones anyway. Like, I don't think they come close to this. Like, it's just not, it's not really got a challenge in the modern day from that perspective. Agree or disagree?
I thought the story was mediocre. No, I'm joking. I'm really glad you said this, because we haven't spoken about anything about this game, really, apart from me saying how far I'm getting and stuff. And yeah, I wasn't thinking it through a survival horror lens. I was literally playing it and enjoying the story to the point where I was like, I can't remember. Bearing in mind, I guess I don't play a lot of the story-driven games you perhaps play, but often I'm kind of, you know, when I read a game's got a good story, I'm a bit like, was that actually good? Honestly, like, do you know what I mean? Good, maybe it's all right for a video game, but is it good? I'm always left a bit disappointed. This was one of the best stories, and the way it was told, as you said, was that I don't really know. It's not a spoiler, is it, to say that some of it's told in like live action?
Oh yeah, no, that's a staple for Remedy. Like, they always implement some live action.
I had not seen that before, and I was like, there's just the one when that first happened. Kind of took a double take, and I was like, hang on, that's not graphics. That is that's the actor who's playing Alan Wake in Alan Wake like garb and playing him. I was like, this is amazing. Little things like that. I was just like, this is so clever. And like you said, it is self-indulgent, and it does. It goes a bit mental, but yeah, I was I was blown away by the story and how it was told and the characters and how it ramped up. And it did keep me guessing, and trying to keep up with it was a little bit confusing at times. But
yeah, yeah. It definitely...
Very, very good.
I don't know if it's on purpose. I would assume it is because they like to do this to people. But it's very... It tries to misguide you constantly and make you confused, and it succeeds. Not to the point where you're like, I don't even know what's going on. Like, you have a base understanding, but at times you're like, what? What's the motivation of this part? What's this character up to actually? So does a good job of misdirecting and keeping you sort of out of the loop. You think like you're getting an understanding of what's happening, and then it will bring something else, a new layer to it. And you're like, oh, bloody hell, that's nothing compared to what I'd seen before. So yeah, and what I was going to say, what I was going to qualify it further, was that outside of the survival horror area, it's definitely up there. Like, it's top tier stuff. It's really good, really well acted, really well written. Has its own little quirkiness as well, which I like. A tiny bit of levity, like Saga and her partner drinking the coffees at the same time in sync. And you kind of, little things like that just sort of made me smirk, but it doesn't break the sort of the atmosphere or the tone, but just enough to make you sort of have a nervous smile before you go back to the ghouls that are waiting for you in the night. So yeah, I mean, it takes many twists and turns. It's highly complex. There's probably things that I've missed. And if I, this, for people that go out and want to like lore dig and read into the game afterwards, there's going to be hundreds and hundreds of things in here for people to discover. Like, that, this means that, that's a reference to that. Like, there's this Remedy universe going on, which you wouldn't have even been aware of.
No.
You know, Max Payne character, old McCaffrey, God rest his soul, he's died now, unfortunately, who plays Alex Casey. That's a clear indication of Max Payne, the character. Like, that's, he played his voice back in the day and sort of reprises it in this way. And then there's Alex Casey, the sort of real life detective, who's, yeah, it's all very like meta at times, but you don't have to know the meta to understand the core mechanics. But if you do know the meta, you can get a little bit more out of it. And yeah, in terms of the delivery of this, to wrangle a dual protagonist style design as well, make it all come together and make sense, is an achievement in itself. Because we've seen this with Resident Evil 2. I remember my main criticism of it, very few of them, was that they've got two protagonists and two campaigns and they don't make sense. There's no continuity between them. You sort of just play them and they're like separate instances, like characters in places they shouldn't have been. It's like a remix, almost like a fun mode.
Yeah.
This is like, no, this is, the game operates like this. You're going to play as both of these characters. You're going to do all their chapters. You can do them in any order you want up to a certain point. So if you're uncomfortable in one area or you want to, you know, stay with Saga longer, you can. And it's not going to be so careless and let you miss things. You will have to go back and experience the other side, but you can choose to do it in any way you wish. You can swap, not quite when you want. There are certain parts of the map, you know, in a safe room that you can, that will let you swap, but you know, it's really well done and smartly thought out. In terms of the dual protagonist side of things, that's obviously this banana peel there. Did they avoid it for you?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I thought both stories were on par. Like the location, I probably preferred Saga's just because she got to go to, you know, different locations. Alan's dark place is like an alternate version of New York City. And it's,
yeah,
it's always dark. It's the dark place. And, you know, the location's just, I think it was just a bit oppressive. I mean, saying that, every time you play Saga, it's all light and fluffy. And the minute she kind of gets into action, it's always just as that fucking sunset. And I'm like, come on, Saga, come back in the morning. Yeah. What are you doing? So no, absolutely avoided. Like, it excelled. It was brilliant. And like you said, the fact that, why they've even given themselves the headache of letting you do it in any order, because I imagine then narratively it still makes sense as you play through in any order. I'm like, you didn't need to do that, but fair play.
Yeah, I mean, they sort of nudge you to say, oh, make sure you go back to the other person, but you don't have to. And thinking back to how it's structured, I think you could just play through one of them and go back to the other. Like I said, it will make you go and do it at a certain point, but you know, you could go back and experience one side. You'll get half, you'll be a bit confused, as you would be, because you're only getting 50% of it. You'll go through the other side and things will start to fall in place. So I can imagine that being just as enjoyable in some ways. But yeah, I do agree that the dark place is very repressive and not a nice place to be. And that's where all the I find all the crazy shit was going on mostly. It's just like this one block of New York almost, isn't it? Like it's one square of New York, and it's definitely got a very deliberate tone. Whereas, like you say, with Saga, you feel like, oh, I can just wander around the town for a little bit and just catch my breath.
Such a simple thing they did with Alan's thing, but it really fucking freaked me out, is that the general enemies there are all those that shadow enemies, aren't they? Like, you'll approach like an alley and there'll be like just a black silhouette of a person. And then probably about 75% of them are harmless.
Yeah.
But it keeps you on your toes because some of them aren't harmless and they'll fucking come at you. And often it's right at the last minute. You'll only have like a second to think, fuck. Because basically you shine your light on them, and if they're harmless, they'll disappear.
Yep.
If they don't, they're coming for you.
Yeah, and it wastes your battery if they disappear. That's so you're like, right, that's that gone. Or you can shoot them as well, but it's the same thing. You're wasting ammo to check if they're even a legit threat. So, and they come at you as well. Like if they hear you, they do come after you, and you're like, oh, is it a real one? Then they just sort of fade away as you've aimed at them. You're like, oh, for fuck's sake, I've just wasted one of my batteries doing that. So it's a really smart way of... Because actually, I think they're very... We'll move into like the mechanics now, I guess, of the combat. And we're probably going over the place, to be honest. But I was impressed at how kind of restricted they were with the combat. Like, there's not tons and tons of it. Like, I watched a walkthrough, like a playthrough, of Alan Wake 1. And that is just encounter after encounter, like... 24 waves of enemies pouring in, etc. Alan Wake 2, there are enemies there, don't get me wrong, but it's very restrained. And it kind of means more when it does kick off. Like, because you've got the Alan side of things where you don't know who is or isn't an enemy, like that kind of adds to it. But I was really impressed that how appropriate the amount of combat was for the game. Because I think if you had too many encounters, the combat would wear quite thin eventually, as it would do in many games that don't have a lot of depth. But this is a shooter, really, with, you know, you use the light on your gun to sort of break the armor of the enemy, not a literal armor, but it's like a dark armor. Then you can shoot them with your various weapons and things that you've picked up. But yeah, what did you make of the combat side of things? Was it too little even, or...
No, I think it's testament to the world they created, because you're always on your toes. You never think, you know, even if you've just had an encounter, you don't feel like, okay, it's going to be 10 minutes before I get something else. You just don't know. So you're always on your guard. You're always creeped out by where you're. Like, if I think of that, the old people's home where you go to, I feel like there's hardly... You know, there's a very, very little encounters in there, but I was fucking shitting myself the whole time. This is on Saga's side.
Yeah.
So, no, I think what sort of sets it apart from other games in the genre, you know? I know, obviously, survival horror is limited ammo, resource management, all of that. It's got all of that in it, but never has there been so few enemies, but still, yeah, it doesn't drop one bit of the tension.
Yeah,
and the atmosphere is really good.
Yeah, I like that restraint, because so often in games it will, in survival horror in particular, you eventually get to the back end of the game and it is just an enemy fest.
Yeah,
like, almost all of them end in that way. Mm-hmm. And not to say this doesn't throw enemies at you at some point, it does, but it's not like it's a consistent thing. It might be a one off or a certain event that's taking place. So yeah, I think that works for the game and for the atmosphere. And I think, to be honest, one of the criticisms I tend to agree with is that there is a lack of probably enemy variety in there.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of got your standard sort of shadows and shoulders. Some can throw things at you. You've got those speed bastards in Saga's world. Like, it's probably maybe a handful on each side that are unique. And maybe they knew that and thought, let's not make this a shooting fest. Let's make it more grounded, a bit slower paced, and... You know, use your dodge only when things get close, restrict the ammo and have people go. But would you agree that perhaps on the enemy front, they may be lacking?
Yeah, it's probably one of my... Basically, two of these things are probably potentially my only criticisms. Yeah, enemy type and then boss encounters. I was a little bit like... Because it starts really strong in that way.
Yes.
I was like, fuck, that's really intense, this first encounter. And then never really lived up to that. And when I think sometimes in survival, I mean, this is its own animal and doesn't need to like pander to other games that have come before it. But I do think sometimes they can be highlights, whereas this never really lived up to that first billing. But it's still decent. I mean, you know, and it's narratively makes sense, I guess, of, you know, what they're both kind of doing, that there wouldn't be, you know, tons of different enemy types. So it does all work within its own structure, I guess.
And what did you think about the combat itself? Was it tight enough for you? Was it too loose? Was it annoying? Was it clunky? How do you find the process of shining a light on someone and firing off?
Neither of these guys are that nimble, are they? But it's class. This it is very much like, this is what turned me on to it. Like when I saw that gameplay trailer where I think it's one of those ritualists comes out of the cabin, smashes through the wall in Cyber's world, and it just looked like Resident Evil. And I was like, well, hang on a minute, this looks really, really polished, like really good graphics. And I was like, over the shoulder view, classic third person shooter vibe. So it's that's the setup in terms of the combat. Like it's exactly what you've seen before. Like neither of these guys are doing roundhouse kicks to their face though or anything. So
no suplexes.
So it's standard. Yeah, it's really serviceable. The dodge mechanic works pretty well when needed. Also if you get down, there's like little rolls to kind of get out of the way of any follow up.
Yeah.
But that's the thing, a lot of these enemies, especially on Alan's side, they teleport, like they'll close the distance on you very quickly.
Yeah.
And there's more than one, really. It's very easy to get snarled up. And you've got enough, you know, moves to get you out of that issue. And there's a lot of, you know, sort of standard shotgun guns, crossbows, they're all there, you know, flares.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a good variety of weapons. I probably maybe potentially miss them, and also like inventory management, very Resident Evil
West.
I'm assuming you can expand that inventory. I don't think I ever got an option to do it, obviously.
Because
I was having to put weapons in my little like shoebox a lot and move them about.
I like the shoebox functionality, and what Tom's sort of describing there is that at safe zones, or little safe havens, as they call them, little safe houses, you can save your game. Sometimes you can switch realities from Saga to Alan, but always there's a shoebox in there, and that's where you can store things that you don't want to carry on your person. So you can't access them until you're at a safe point, but if you've got like a load of grenades or something that you're not going to use, you can put them in there, and it frees up space in your inventory to pick up more stuff. So yeah, it's that balance, that inventory management is definitely, you know, ripped straight from the old school Resident Evils and still works today. I quite like that restriction, because it is annoying, like when you're deep into an area and you're like, could really do with picking up. Even if you don't need the item, you think, I will need that later probably, and you can't pick it up because you've, you know, been careless with your keeping stuff that you don't need, or you've taken up one too many medipacks that take up like five slots. You're like, I don't need two of those, and even need one of them. I'm barely using this. Did you find the game hard? Like, and I'm talking from a combat perspective, not a puzzle perspective, which is a different kettle of fish. But combat wise, did you suffer with any? Because this can be the bane of survival horror, and people get stuck at certain bits. When we had it, didn't we, with Dead Space, where, you know, poor old Isaac that you had was getting the shit kicked out of him on your one. It kind of soured the experience. Did you have any trouble with this, or was it fairly well balanced?
This was the opposite of that experience, and generally speaking, not at all. Yeah. Got snarled up a couple of times, and I think probably just user error. there's a couple of, I don't know if you remember, there's an encounter in the movie theater. I don't know why. It's not even that hard, but I just couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And then there's another, like, quite like a set piece later on that I think we spoke about, which again died a few times on that. Generally speaking, not at all.
Yeah.
I think it was just carelessness or whatever. Just wasn't managing the crowds when they did kind of appear, and I did get put down a few times, but no, never put off by anything, and didn't find it particularly hard.
No. What do you think of, like, and this is aside to Alan Wake 2, more of a question for, I suppose, gaming in general, but if we're in the survival horror area, is there a balance to be had about making something like this feel a bit more refined, a bit smoother, a bit not necessarily easier, but just a bit more snappy? Or would that take away from what it is? You know what I'm trying to say? Like, often in survival horror, we'll make excuses because, well, it's part of the, you want to be scared, you want to be under pressure. Those tank controls, they're unbelievable. Like, you've got to be, do you know what I mean? Like, is there a, or actually is the opposite true, that if you make it too snappy, if you make it like darting around like Final Fantasy Rebirth, it's just going to not feel like the game that we've kind of signed up for. So I kind of get both sides of it. It's frustrating to sort of work around clunky control schemes, but also there is kind of this other side where if you make it too accessible, you're too powerful or too easy for you to dodge around, you're not going to be feeling the pressure of the situation, which is part of the experience for me.
Yeah, I guess the sweet spot with that would be like a Last of Us 2.
That is the one, isn't it? That's the
girls there are nimble, but when they want it, narratively, they can easily put you in a little, you know, in a, when you're down in that hospital with that Rat King lurking, they can constrain you in different ways and still make it feel very, like, you know, oppressive and like a lot of pressure. But then when you're in the sort of wide open spaces, you can go around like a little Terminator ninja and never get seen and always feel like you're on the front foot. So it can be done, but I think in this world, you the clunkiness is, it's clearly a gameplay choice and probably does work.
Yeah, I mean, I always take the lead from how the game just by default plays. And what I mean by that is when you push forward on the stick, what does the character do? If they jog, then I'm like, okay, the game's more around that. If they're walking, I'm immediately like, okay, there's a reason why it's doing that. You're going to be quite grounded in the game, and I sort of play towards that. And especially in survival horror games, I don't want to be sprinting around corners and not knowing what's there. You want to be able to sort of check around things, use the camera and see what's coming. And this is a game where you're left walking. And you can sprint, obviously. That's not that's an option. You just got to click it in. But that's normally a tell for me about pacing of how to sort of play it if I'm struggling, for example. So the way the game's structured, we talked about the dual protagonist, you can go back and forth between the realities. Both, Alan's in like one area that has little like rooms and places you can go and visit, like different places like we've mentioned earlier. Saga has locations in and around sort of Bright Falls, like a little side town, the main sort of Bright Falls town itself, the woods nearby, etc., etc. And on her side, it's a bit more of an open game. Now, initially, you'll sort of go to an area of a specific target and you'll follow that linear path, like when you first arrive, examining the victim, the first victim for the... Well, not the first victim, one of the victims for the ritualistic murders. And after that, it kind of gives you an opportunity to sort of explore. And the further you push on the narrative, the more the map opens up. And what they use in Bright Falls or in Saga's world is that it's kind of like a flood that's taken place, and that rescinds as you progress through the game, through the story, so you can actually access more areas of it. It's got this like little onion sort of level where you can sort of go around and explore. How did you find that? Because there's many games that are just, especially in survival horror, narrative focused, that are pretty linear. You know, you can do a little bit of exploring here and there. This has a lot of stuff to go off and see, lots of side bits and pieces, that case study sort of wall that she's got up that can fill up quick with different things to be doing. But did you find that a welcome distraction and something that you was partaking in, looking for cult stashes and whatnot?
Yeah, I'm glad you've sort of brought this up, because it actually brings up a couple of points, maybe negatives for me, only small ones. But yeah, so because I was really into this, the first few chapters, or actually almost all the way through, I would always do, it basically let you complete the chapter, then, as you say, the flood would then recede and you could then normally go and mop up and get your collectibles. So I did that almost all the way through, and then I realised I was waning a bit towards the end. I was like, this is feeling a little bit too long, because I don't want to do it on this last chapter. And I had a lot of stuff by that point anyway, so I was a bit like, do I need any upgrades? So generally thought it was good, and enjoyed it. What else did you just mention? The case files.
Yeah.
So this actually quite, you know, I'll throw it back at you in a way, but they're quite different, aren't they? So like one of Saga's main mechanics is that she is like a really good FBI agent. So she'll be like, she has her mind place, which is like an office she goes to in her head. And that'll be for like profiling people she's met.
Yeah.
And kind of like trying to work out, are they telling the truth? Are they lying? And then actually like the clues she finds around the towns, they have like the classic sort of FBI pin on a wall with strings, say like, okay, like who's this guy? How's he connected to him?
Yeah.
And you actually have to manually kind of put those in. And sometimes that was a little bit frustrating, to be honest. Again, normally probably me not reading what it's saying and actually looking at what my options are to match it up against. But, you know, sometimes it gets a bit fiddly and you're like, I know where this needs to go. And for some reason, it ain't just clicking in. And
the game won't progress unless you do certain points in the Mind
Palace.
Exactly.
You have to kind of like get her to work out the clues to then work out the next option. But what I was going to say is because that is then very different to like Alan's core mechanic of him kind of being able to almost rewrite the world around him to see different things or to progress. Like, it's what did you think about that? Because that is two very different, but they are different, you know, core mechanics from both characters. Did you have a preference or?
I think Alan's one's definitely more interesting because it impacts the world around you. And essentially the way it works, you go into like his writer's room and you'll be standing in a certain area and it'll be surrounded with, I don't know, like cult, you know, ritual site or something like that. And because Alan is a writer and a creative, he can formulate new plot lines, they're called, and write in a new sort of narrative beat and change the surroundings. So he might change the cultist ritual site to something else, like, I don't know, an investigation site for a different murder or the police or something like that. And then that will open up, hopefully for you as the player, a new path to sort of progress down on through the map. I really like that because it's kind of like you select it, it does a little like clanger on the typewriter, and then the world is immediately changes, like flashes in front of your eyes and it changes immediately. And I like that mechanic of experimenting with those, because even you can choose stuff in there that isn't the answer of progressing forward. Yeah. And it will still give you a little bit of like lore. It'll be like you might find a bit of evidence even or a little pickup and things like that. So I really liked Alan's version of that. I think that's really, really smart. And just seemed like a bit cool bit of tech watching the world just immediately change around and sort of experimenting with that, trying to find the right narrative plot line for the right area to get onwards and find secret stuff as well. I even found one bit where I found an extra weapon because I changed it to, you know, a different type of world around me. And then on the saga side, that's a little bit more low-key. So like you said, it's the classic sort of police investigator sort of map that they will build out. It's fine. I didn't have any problems with it. I was able to get through what I needed to do. Every time I got something new, I would often go in and do it. I was one of those players. Whereas I think if you let all that toot stack up.
I let it stack up and it would have fucking pages to have to
put up. Because it brings up a little prompt on like the bottom left-hand side, I think it is. And it will say you've got a new pin to put on. And I was like, okay, I'll go in and do that now whilst it's fresh in my head. Drop it in and go. My only criticism really of, and I think it happened in both of them, but definitely Saga's, was that I'd go in there, do the stuff in the little Mind Palace, fine. When I'd return to the game for about 2 seconds, it would be really slow and framey. Like, the game was like, pushing it quite far. And in fact, I think when you go into the Mind Palace, it's quite jittery as well. And when you'd come out, so because I was going in quite often, I was a bit like, it's getting a little bit slow. And sometimes when you hit the prompt or the button, it was a bit slow to teleport me in there. It doesn't teleport you, does it? Because actually the enemies can still get you whilst you're in there. It does make that clear to start with. It's not a pause, like the world is sort of living on around you. But I like both of them, I guess, is the short answer. And Alan's one's definitely an interesting thing. I think that could be its own game. Like, you could really go super deep into that. I think that's something they may well do in the future. So I think
probably sounds more complicated. Like, we're probably complicated.
Yeah, it's
sounds
not. That's
complicated. No, it works really well. Like, it's very clear of what you kind of, you know, at least ballpark need to be doing.
Yeah.
And it actually works very well.
Yeah, it's a nice little wrinkle. And again, because, like I said, the combat encounters, you know, there aren't hundreds and hundreds of them. Like, it's getting you to do other things. It's more puzzle solving based, more interaction and just sort of scratching that little brain to get things moving. Like I said, it opens up new paths and you can find little secrets and whatnot. So really liked both of them, but Alan's one's definitely the more interesting, I think. I'd assume most people would agree with that.
Yeah, do you know what? That's actually another thing. Actually, I thought of is I think I said this to you as I started playing. I quite like the fact that I feel like all the puzzles in this were just maybe one level deeper than what you would normally get in survival horror. Like I know sometimes Resident Evil could be really sort of abstract and a bit like, well, hang on, why does this make sense in any way, shape, or form? But just this in the world building, just how you had to kind of figure out maybe a code.
Yeah,
just always took it was like one extra step that kind of really made you have to think about what you were doing.
Yeah, you get the first two easy, and the third one you'd be like, "Hang on,
yeah,
what is that?" There's lots of like mini puzzles in the game for like opening cult stashes and other bits and pieces, and there's one sort of like it's kind of a puzzle in Alan's one where you've got to find these little spiral icons. And I think I can't. They give you now. They give you like points to put in your guns,
yeah, they're like, so he has like words of power, words of wisdom.
That's it, it's a word of power, then, isn't it? Yeah, that's it. Yeah, so that's his upgrade tree. It's basically you find these words and these spirals, and then you can like add 10% to a certain weapon, or there's other perks, there's little upgrades for both of them. But they're a sort of a puzzle in themselves because sometimes they're sort of half on one part of the wall, and you've got to get the right perspective to get the full kind of circle. But generally, I really enjoyed. I got most of them. I didn't do all of them. There's a couple early on, like a stash that I just couldn't, I could not work out. I was like, I'm not going to look it up. I'm just going to walk away. And when I do New Game Plus one day, I will go through and get them all and have to use a guide for some of them still.
One particularly, I just couldn't, even it felt like, I thought it was almost like the game had broke. So I felt like I had it perfectly, but it just wouldn't lock in. I was like, well, I'm clearly doing something wrong here.
Yeah. You only got to be like 5% off and you're under, like, if at the very beginning, the understanding of the puzzle that, and you'll never get it. That's the double-edged sword of puzzles and whatnot. But yeah, and I guess that to play into that, we mentioned the worlds are a bit more explorable than what you might expect. And that's the reason to go out and do it, is to find resources, to find... I think there's manuscript pages, isn't it, for Saga that upgrades our weapons. There's little lunch boxes that you find that are themed around the game and, again, a bit meta. And you can use those to, again... add 10% to your reload time, or reduce your reload time, I should say, or 10% damage, or other little perks and whatnot. So there's little upgrades in there for Saga and Alan's arsenal, and you find that through exploring. Again, both the worlds, I think, encourage it in a nice way. You could just mainline it, I guess, but I think you'd miss a lot of what's going on. I don't know if there's anything else in terms of like the design side of things. Let's go into the performance side. I played on that performance mode, so 60 FPS. Ran pretty smoothly. I'm not going to say it was completely perfect. It wasn't like Final Fantasy 16 when you're running around outside of combat and it's like really struggling, like almost ruining the game to a certain point. But it wasn't 100% smooth, but it was perfectly serviceable. But didn't have any crashes or anything like that. So that was good to see. Did you have any comments on just the raw sort of performance and cleanness of the code? Did you have any issues from that side of things?
No, I played it in performance, had no crashes or anything of bother. And yeah, I thought it's just surprised how good the game actually looked again. Like when you go back to the fact that, you know, it's digital only, you know, I know it's a big studio, but, you know, these games don't seem to make a lot of money, and yeah, the polish, I was surprised that, to be honest, it looked as good as pretty much anything I played. And I had no problems with the running of the game, but I'm the worst person to be asking. I ain't noticing anything, so
I'd agree on the production values. Well, if they weren't high, they'd done a good job at masking it, because it was in all areas it was very, very good, very solid, and again better than many that you'll find, particularly in this space as well. You just won't often find things like that. Any other business? I want to call out the sound, because I had headphones on playing this. And
why are you doing that to yourself?
Well,
fuck
lights
me.
Off, headphones on. That's the rule for these. That's the rule for most games. And the sound really is excellent in this game, be it you can go to the voice acting, the soundtrack, both original and sort of, you know, licensed stuff, But the
do you know what, mate? I don't know how you did that, because there are, they're not jump scares, but they're like audio scares, I guess. And even like some of the, like, the whispers and stuff you get in Alan, like, why are you I don't know how you did that.
I'll tell you what, it's helpful in most games. It's helpful in this game because I could hear where things are coming from. So I don't get my pants pulled down from behind usually. I mean, that's in real life as well, generally. But in the game world, it's hard to get sort of catch me because I can hear stuff going on behind me. But yeah, the whispers and the sounds, like the crackling of the woods when you're out there, the scuttling of whatever it is over the hill, and a really great job with the ambient sound as well, which just, for me, atmosphere-wise, it's really good. Really, really good. The map I really liked. Because you go near a container or something you don't even notice it, but it will show what you've seen and not unlocked, and also show things that you have unlocked. So if you've unlocked a container, it'll have a little mark for it. If you haven't, it will show on the map. And it also, even just like random resources, if you walk past like a, you know, some handgun ammo and you didn't notice it, you'll check that map and think, oh, hang on a minute, better quickly jog back and get that. Trying to pick things up can be a bit of a fiddle. Like the prompts were a little bit like, I was like,
weirdly, sometimes when you got close to it, the prompt disappears. And you have to take a step back and you're like, hang on a minute.
That I can never get my head around. It's like a, it must be based on the reticle. And if you like, because you don't expect to be like that. You think if I walk near it, I'll get it. But that could do some cleaning up.
You know what? You're right about the map, though, because I've got the worst sense of direction in real life and video games. So I'm in and out of that map constantly.
Yeah.
And agreed. Very, very good. Very user-friendly. Yeah.
Yeah. Any other business from your side of things?
No, I don't think so. I mean, maybe just some of the, like, the supporting cast, like everyone in it was well acted, interesting. Really, so are the studio from Finland or Scandinavia then?
Yeah,
or is that just
Remedy based out there?
Yeah, just gave it a real nice quirk, which I imagine, it, to be honest, it's made me want to revisit like a Control, because I was just very, very impressed with the story, the characters, and the world these guys built. Just I hope it doesn't take another 13 years to potentially revisit.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, they're going to do Control 2 next, and this, you know, they set the table with Control with the Alan Wake DLC, and, you know, there's some references to it in here, which I would have probably got on. You would have just shrugged off. That's, but it's a very different game. That's the thing. That's the masterful thing about Remedy, is they've made a great action game where you can like fly around and do all sorts, and then you've got this. This is much more survival horror than the original, even. Like I said, the restraint in the enemies is there for a reason, to keep the atmosphere going. The fact that it doesn't give you as much ammo and whatnot. And I think if you implemented the Control scheme of Control into this, it wouldn't work. Going back to that point I was sort of alluding to earlier, like you have to make the Control scheme appropriate for the, I always say, the atmosphere or the theme of the game has to fit. In the same way, if you're going to make an action game, you won't put rocks in the boots of the protagonist. And you can do the opposite to have the other effect. But I mean, it's a really good game. Definitely has some True Detective and sort of Twin Peaks vibes, which is there for all to see. There's some really clever stuff and graphical effects that they do that kind of are quite amazing when you actually sit there and think that's actually happening in real time with the game running at like 60 FPS, and the way they blend in the real time stuff like you mentioned earlier is really, really clever too. Because again, that could really go wrong. You could think that looks really out of place.
Oh, it could look, but, absolutely.
But how they managed to make it feel like not jarring, I don't know what they did. The continuity between the outfits and the character, like it really, because they're not, if you put them side by side, it was, that's the computer, that's real, but when that transfer happens, you're not at all even concerned about it. But yeah, it's really good stuff. They've got New Game Plus out now, like I said, in the final draft, so I'm considering going back to it at some point, but I guess we'll see. Right, let's do the Needful. The Dimp Digital Gaming Gallery. were all the greats. Well, actually, not all the greats. Some of the stuff's not in there, not exactly great, but all the good stuff gets in. Are we going to unlock the gallery doors for Alan Wake 2 for you?
Yes, of course.
Excellent. Same for me. It's 100% going in. And really, here's the difficult bit. There's many ways that it can be graded: a platinum, a gold, a silver, or a bronze. For Alan Wake 2, Mr. Pac-Man, what are you going to go with?
I'm very pleased to say I'm giving this a firm gold.
Yep. Very good indeed. It's between a gold and a platinum.
Bloody hell.
I really do think it is that good.
Yeah.
Fuck it, it can have the platinum.
Jesus.
It can have it. I really, really did love this game. I think it's a tour de force, does all manner of things. Remedy, if they weren't already on the map, will be now, but they'll be under a lot of pressure to try and replicate something like this. And I don't know if they can. Really, this really is good. There's just so much to love about this game. And, like, in terms of a... What should I say? Like, this is probably one of the most complete packages of a game I've played. Like, if you combine everything, whether it's the, you know, the visual side of things, the narrative side of things, the gameplay, the atmosphere, the music, and even to go as far to say, I mean, I know this sounds a bit cheesy, but when you think of video games as art, this is like one of those type of games. It's not as many games that don't. You kind of feel a bit weird saying that Helldivers 2 is a piece of art, even though it technically is. But this feels purposefully aiming at that and really, I think, succeeds in most of it. And,
you know, it's a great shout, because for me, when I talk about those games and how most of them miss a beat with me, the games I like narratively are often the ones where they're minimalistic, you know, like Shadow of the Colossus, Inside, Limbo, ones that kind of really require more questions than answers and you to kind of dig online to find out what the fuck was going on anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, they kind of build it all through atmosphere. Less is more, I think, with video games. This is the exact opposite of that. As I said, I can't remember enjoying a story more since maybe, I don't even know, Last of Us, perhaps?
Mm.
It's been a long time. I was completely on board and into what was going on from minute one, really.
Yeah, it's great. It really is. And fascinated to see what they do next to this. It'll be a while, I should imagine, if they do anything. I'm sure they kind of want to after the amount of love they've been getting for it. But it really is good. It has so many fresh new ideas and seamlessly drops them in. My one complaint of Resident Evil 2 when I gave it the gold was the dual protagonist thing. So even if you want to simplify it to that level, they've done it here and said, well, you can do it.
Yeah.
This is a way how, and it's gives you agency as a player. You can decide what you're doing with each of the protagonists for how long. Shows how flexible the narrative is. And then on top of it, it's shit scary most of the time. So all those boxes I want ticked are there. Any final words from yourself on Alan Wake 2?
No, just go and play. If you're on the fence, check it out.
Yeah, if you're on the fence, and obviously if you're a physical only person, I would say this is one to make an exception for. But if you're into the genre, again, I don't think you could give this to someone who loves Bayonetta or who loves Super Mario mostly and Mario Kart to go and play this. It's not. Like I said, it is up its own arse, to lack of a better term, at many stages. But if you're on board with that and happy to sort of just let that wash over you and just enjoy it for what it is, then I think most people have a great time with it, and hopefully many more get it and we get a third or a fourth and a fifth, maybe not a fourth. You need to freeze enough, isn't it?
Freeze, yeah, good number.
Don't want Resident Evil sort of, what are we on now? 8?
I don't know.
Village is 8, isn't it? Plus the spin-off, yep. So it's over 10 anyway. Resident Evil's still cool, don't worry. We still love Resident Evil. We still have Dead Space. Actually, we both didn't like Dead Space that much.
Right.
It's had the potential for that, but I think, much better and fresh as well.
It's a golden age for this survival horror, though, now, isn't it? It was a different time when that came out originally. Now it's,
This sets a bit of a bar now. Like, I know Resident Evil will never be this. It will never be our house. It will never go for that level of texture. But I kind of will miss it now. I'll be like, well, someone's done it.
Yeah.
You could. It's been shown. So, yeah. Special game to me. Looking forward to seeing seeing some more from Remedy for sure. I hope they can continue to go from strength to strength. Anyway, we'll close down this edition of Idle Game Chat. Pac-Man and Adcock out. Mr. Apps out. Nothing more for us to say other than thanks for your time and ta-da.
This was a DIMP Digital production.